What's up, listeners? This is your host, Steven. I want to give you all a heads up that this episode is a raw and real testimony from our guest today. That being said, there is some language and content that you may not want your little ones to hear. But with that, his story has been an inspiration of God's work to me, and I know it will be impactful to others. So let's get into this week's episode. Good morning, podcast world. Today, on this beautiful Thanksgiving weekend, we have someone who I consider to be a good friend of mine, John Kidd. How you doing this morning, John?
Good, man. How you doing?
Doing well. Happy to have you here. Thanks for being willing to come over here at 8 a.m. and deal with all of our sound issues that we ran into at first.
It's all good. You're doing it for me. That's great. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you being here. What exactly does a morning like this look like on the farm for you?
Well, you know, it's a horse farm, so it's not like we're up at the crack of dawn. So, you know, whatever the family wants to do a lot of times. But, you know, you usually feed around 9 o'clock. If you're a little late, the horses won't tell on you. Carolyn feeds. And, you know, the kids are getting up too. And, you know, I don't know, they're getting to be teenagers now, so they like to sleep in, but you know, whatever we're gonna do.
Yeah,
but usually Saturday's the day to either do a family thing or tighten up around the farm or do chores, this, that, and the other. And then, you know, Sunday we're at church half the day and you know, finishing off that.
Yeah, and actually John and I met through doing milling work slash building tables slash all the stuff, but we met through Firewood for Families that we do at the church. You happened to be there, and through a mutual friend, I was like, wait, there's a guy in Calvert area that does this kind of stuff. And you know, you live in Lothian, right? So
right.
Yeah, so I was like, man, this is awesome. This exists around here. And then you know, I meet this guy, John, and he's got all the tools that I wish that I had. You know, he's got the skid steer, he's got the mill, he's got the all the fancy sanders that, you know, I don't think he started with all that, but you built up to it. And so I was like, man, this is awesome. Like, I want to hang out with this guy more. But that's how conversations kind of started with us. And I was doing that for probably a full year part-time, coming to hang out on a Monday or every other Monday or whatever that looked like. Sometimes frustrating to you because I'd call out last minute and he'd be like, I needed you here today. Which I always appreciated your honesty. Yeah.
You're handy. Yep. You're strong. You pick up heavy objects well.
And that's what I was. I was the heavy object picker upper.
Yeah. You're running the sawmill. You need somebody to grab the other side of the board.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But honestly, like, I just loved the conversations we got to have just hanging out. That was like one of my favorite parts about it. And I think something God used that maybe we didn't see at first that he would use.
Yeah.
And you know, there were times where you and I would just sit in your UTV or whatever, and we would just sit there and chat for hour and a half or 2 hours.
Right.
You know, after we finished the work for the day, and those were always like good times. And we always had, I always walked away like, man, I feel encouraged. And I remember one particular time where I was late, and I think at the time you were pretty upset with me. You know, you were like, you need to be here on time. And I said, you know, I was like, yeah, the reason why I was late was because I was doing a devotional. And you were like, huh?
Yeah.
And I thought that was funny because, you know,
I was like,
you
need to devote
that,
yourself to getting to work on time.
Right, exactly, exactly. But you said, you know, now you were like, that actually did impact me. Not encouraging being late for your job, guys. You know, be on time. But this particular time, you said, actually made a difference. Why is that? Why did it make a difference?
Well, I mean, you know, it made me, I was like, what are you doing? A devotional, you know, and I didn't really ever participate in such a thing. And so, you know, it's like, what's this guy doing? And I mean, you know, I took you as a serious person and I knew had a good foundation in the Bible and, you know, I'm, you know, trying to learn that. And, so it caught my ear, you know, basically it caught my ear. And so, you know, I was just telling you when I walked in, it's like, now I do devotionals and it's like, I can't start my day without one. Mm-hmm. And it was you that got my attention to that. And it's like, it's funny. I was the guy lecturing you, like the older guy, like get to work on time, yeah. But you were teaching me something, right? I mean, so I learned from you on that. And it's cool, and I respect it, and I respected why you were late, actually, because, you know, that was more important to you. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's pretty cool. Thanks for being late.
Yeah, well, I just really appreciated, like, your humility there, because, yes, I was late, but now you're able to tell me now, like, it did impact you, and that, like, God used that, not necessarily me being late, but just the conversation that we had because I was late. That you got something out of that. And so that was
well, if
cool.
You had just come to me and you were telling me how great devotionals are, I probably would have just, you know, taken it with a grain of salt, mm-hmm. but your actions were that you were late and that you're a responsible person. So you knew you were going to walk into a little tension from me, but that was more important to you. So action speaks louder than words, mm-hmm. always. And mm-hmm. so I was like, you know, here's this responsible young guy that, put this priority before me. So it made me look at it. Yeah, so actions is always more valuable than words.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty cool. Yeah.
I appreciate that you saying that, though.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so like the other thing, too, is John gave my wife and I this beautiful Live Edge slab that's been sitting in my shop for probably close to a year, maybe a little less. But I think it was sitting in there for so long because I was so overwhelmed by the project itself, because I was a little bit like, man, am I really able to even build something like this? But being around John and learning from him gave me the confidence to build something like that. So, yeah, I just want to thank you for that. And thank you even for the slab, too. And now we have a beautiful dining room table that we can sit at. We sat at for Thanksgiving, and it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just talking before this that it came from a tree that fell down in somebody's yard and is probably like 150 to 200 years old. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, now we get to sit there and read the book that God wrote, you know,
yeah.
the grain and the tree. And, it's cool. And that, like the way that you described that to me when we were milling one day, I was like, dude, I'm all in on this milling stuff now. I was like, we can read a book that God wrote. That's awesome. Like, right. I never even thought about it like that. That's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I was like, yeah, this woodworking thing, I'm all in. I was like, I'm going to do this the rest of my life to some extent, whether it's for actually making money or just to do it because it's fun.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I love milling. For people that don't know, Live Edge Slab is, you know, taking a tree or a log and laying it down and cutting it, long wise, and then you know, you're just pulling these slabs out, and when you cut it, when you mill it and lay it open, it's like it's artwork, and it's like a page in a book that you're the first one to ever see that page. Mm-hmm. And if you tilt the log 1 degree another way and cut it, it tells a different story. Mm-hmm. Just 1 degree is different.
Yeah.
Or you can rotate it a degree and it's a totally different story. And as you sand it and you get down through the grain moves left, right, up and down, and it changes as you put your labor into it. And it's just beautiful. God's artwork is everywhere. And it's like, look at your hardwood floor now. Look at all the designs in that. And it's incredible. And I mean, I'm in awe at the beauty every time I do it. So, mm-hmm. to have that, you know, as a dining room table. And then the slab that I gave you, the next one in that line, I got in my shop right now, and I'm getting ready to make that our dining room table. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, it's a beautiful book, and it's everywhere. And, you know, the same wood can be used to build houses. The same wood can be used to make paper. I mean, it's just look at the abundance mm-hmm. in such a cool gift.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that God gives us.
Yeah.
It's, and it can be fuel to heat.
Yep.
You know, keep
yep.
you warm. I yeah. mean, it's just what a cool plan.
What can't you do with wood, you know?
Right. So, yeah, it's awesome. I'm glad I could share that with you, and I'm glad you see it
mm-hmm.
for the way I see it, because it's an amazing thing. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the bigger things that we were talking about getting into our main topic here is just all about your testimony, all about, like, and it was funny because you were asking me, like, you were like, what do you want to know about me, you know, today? And I was like, you know, I know a lot about you just through conversations we've had on your farm. And I just think that you could speak to somebody out there, and if not multiple people, you know, who are struggling with addiction of some sort. But you were telling me, you know, you showed up on this farm with a weed whacker, and then somehow you were able to own this farm later. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I guess I don't have the, you know, I always dread when people say, what do you do for a living? And it's like, how long you got? Because it's not like really simple. Yeah. I mean, I tell people I'm a carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Jesus did. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I am a carpenter. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know how long we got, but, you know, I'm my only child. You know, I was born in Deal, Maryland. And mm-hmm. my parents are... My dad's a boat mechanic, and my mom used to be a mortgage banker.
Mm-hmm.
She's retired now, but, you know, they probably had me when they were too young. Mm-hmm. They were 20 years old. They got divorced when they were three, mm-hmm. when I was three, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was kind of bounced between the two of them for a while. And, you know, when I was a little kid, I was kind of a latchkey kid. And, you know, coming from that background, you kind of don't get the best foundation as a kid, you know, your self-esteem's a little yeah. damaged. And, so, you know, growing up, I just, you know, it's ambivalent. And, you know, I grew older and, you know, I lived with my dad when I was 16 and, we got into motocross. I started doing that for a while and, I found, I really loved the competition mm-hmm. of it. And, mm-hmm. I had something to prove always. It's like I had something to prove
mm-hmm.
and I really got into it. And so like we did that for a long time. And, in 1989, I was, 10th in the United States in racing and did good at it. And, but when, I got to be like 20, 21, found this thing called girls and alcohol. It was a lot more appealing mm-hmm. than racing. So it kind of pulled me away from that. And, you know, I started into the party in life and, it took me down a bad road. And, you know, I started hanging with a group that quite frankly, you would think was the better group. There's a private school group. I mean, I went to public school, but, we got into drinking a lot and got into drugs and started to, you know, just do that lifestyle. And it was fun at first, you know, and, alcohol did something for me. It filled in a blank mm-hmm. in my personality, and it's like I was always kind of shy
mm-hmm.
and you know, socially kind of didn't fit in. And when I drank, it just filled that void. Like mm-hmm. I was like the life of the party. I was yep. funny, and you know, I was relaxed, and you know, I could talk to girls and all this stuff. Just, man, this is great. It's like the antidote to everything. But it, you know, of course, it doesn't always stay that way. So, you know, it got to be where it would give me a high at first, but after years and years and years of doing it, I needed it to be normal. So I was always in a low state and I needed it just to function. So while all this is going on, you know, I was still, you know, a responsible guy. I went through high school and graduated and didn't really know what I was going to do with my life. I mean, you know, like most kids coming out of high school, you know, 18 years old, what am I going to do? So started delivering pizzas in Deal. And then after that, got into racing the motocross. So I started working at local bike shop down the road, Cycle 5, and worked for those people. And I was always a good worker. I always aimed to please and showed up on time. And, you know, I was always a good, responsible person. Even when I was goofing off and partying, you know, I'd try to get there on time. And, you know, I'd stink of alcohol, but I was on there on time. And so I worked at the bike shops for a while, and I was racing, and it was a great gig because I got my bike parts for cheap. And so
now you're good.
Turn that phone off. And so it was a good gig for a while, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, and doing this thing. And then one of the bike shop I was working for laid me off because I kept getting injured, and I broke my collarbone racing in 1989. And said, you know, you're a good worker, and you got a future here being a mechanic, but we're going to lay you off because you keep getting hurt. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I went on unemployment, and I just kind of just partied a lot. Mm-hmm. And was kind of really screwing up at that point in my life. I was like 21 then, and actually the person who just called me, mm-hmm. His uncle needed somebody to work mm-hmm. on his farm. Mm-hmm. And I needed a job. I needed something to do. So he needed somebody to run the weed eater and be a farm hand. So I went to work for this guy named Kevin, and I used to run the weed eater and I feed the horses. He had a mm-hmm. horse farm in Upper Marlboro. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started doing that part-time, and I started going to Anne Arundel Community College because I didn't really know what I wanted to be. And I did that for a while, and I more and more got, you know, into this farm thing. You know, he took a liking to me, and, you know, he would he used me more and more. And he would, you know, say, like, you know, you're going to build a shed. I need you to build a shed. And I'd say, oh, I don't know how to build a shed. And he's like, well, you're going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And so he'd go buy the materials and say, there they are, figure it out. And I'd go home and watch, like, Bob Vila.
Yeah.
And just, like, figure it out and read books. And I'd build the darn shed. Yep. And I'd make mistakes, but the next shed looked better. Mm-hmm. And it was a good relationship because he gave me, like, a blank palette to, like, learn my skills on. Mm-hmm. And, we became good friends, and it turned into a full-time job. I ended up building an apartment above a barn on that farm and ended up moving onto the farm. I moved out of my father's house when I was like 23 and onto that farm into a house trailer for a while, and then built the apartment and paid Kevin rent. And, you know, while I was there, I built everything on that farm with my own two hands. And Kevin was a single guy. Kevin was a drinker. He would, you know, get his Miller Lite every day. He wasn't drinking before 4, mm-hmm. but at 4 o'clock he'd start drinking, mm-hmm. and it was like a drinker's paradise. And I lived on this place, and every day I'd start drinking at 4, and we'd be up drinking till midnight, and, you know, get up the next morning with a hangover and go back to work. And there was no repercussions, you know, so it was a great job for an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And I lived there, and if I was late, he didn't care, but you know, because he was had a hangover too. But heck, I mean, I did that for years and years and years, and I was pretty much running the whole farm. I was the caretaker. I fed the horses. I mm-hmm. you know, was building things. I built 2 apartments with my own hands on that farm. So I mean, while I was in this lifestyle of addiction, I mean, I was still learning things. And, I mean, I was really into carpentry. I mean, buying tools and this, that, and the other. And, but at the same time, I was really, really developing a bad drinking habit. And, you know, the more you abuse something like alcohol, it'll turn on you. And, it did. It just, you know, became completely addicted to alcohol, and I needed it to live. And, in the meantime, you know, I'm working there, and I ended up getting 1 DWI. I got another DWI. I got in trouble. They put me down in Calvert County Treatment Facility for 28 days when I was, I don't know, probably 25 years old. And that didn't work. Got out, went back to the farm, kept drinking, kept working. And another thing, cool thing about being at the farm is like, there's a lot of girls that came in, you know, involved with horses. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. ended up, got a girlfriend, that was boarding there, and she moved in with me, and yeah, it was probably not the best relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, codependency and alcoholism go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And she moved in with me for a while, and that didn't work out, and we broke up, and she moved on, and then here comes this other girl, and we end up shacking up, and it was a pretty bad relationship in that, you know, it was a control thing. Codependency and alcoholism go hand in hand because you basically got two incomplete people that are trying to, like, struggle for the direction of this relationship, and you got two people that probably don't have great self-esteem that think, you know, they can't do any better than this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just running, you know, pretty much a bad life. You know, I'm in a bad relationship, in a bad situation, on a farm where I'm drinking all the time, and my boss is cool with me drinking. And, you know, it's just, you know, I'm learning stuff while I'm there, but, you know, it's just not a good situation in the drinking and getting in trouble. And I think in my late 20s, I end up getting like a third DWI. They put me down in the same treatment facility again. Mm-hmm. And I was in maximum security for 10 days.
Dang.
And then they moved me over to the minimum security. It was basically like work release treatment facility. And of course, forced treatment usually doesn't work because people are in denial. And I remember we were in there in a group setting, and they had some AA people in there, and they were talking to us. And one guy, you know, he was a psychiatrist talking to the group, and he says, each and every one of you have done exactly 100% perfectly everything you need to do to be right where you are right now. Mm. And it made me think, it's like, really? Nah. You know, I had bad luck, or, and it's somebody else's fault, or this, that, and the other, but he was right, you know. It's my fault I'm sitting right here, and it's not by an accident. And it just, you know, the light started to come on that, you know, you got a problem. And I ended up, in my late 20s, this girl that I was dating, she wanted to get married, and I, you know, something said, this ain't right, and I just mm-hmm. didn't get married, and she ended up finding somebody else before she left me mm-hmm. and started basically cheating on me. Mm. And I kind of got wise to it. And it was a really bad period of time when I was breaking up with this girl because her mom lived on the farm on a trailer. Mm-hmm. So, like, she would leave me and go live with her mother so I could still see what was going on.
Oh, man, yeah. That'd be hard.
Yeah, and, like, and, yeah, she's trying to, like, hide things from me, but mm-hmm. I knew it was going on.
Yep.
And, there was a party going on in the farm one night, and she had some people over, and there was a couple of young hands that lived on the farm, so we had a party one night. And, you know, I used to be a fun guy when I drank, but then when, you know, this, everything started going south, I was not a fun guy anymore. Mm-hmm. It was more of a, wasn't that violent, but I was just nasty. Mm-hmm. And I would always argue politics, and I was just an a-hole. Mm-hmm. And this one guy, I didn't know who he was, he was on, you know, my farm basically, and he's, you know, expounding his politics, and they're opposite of mine. And I went home and got a 9mm handgun. Mm. Came back down there and stuck it in his face. Mm. I said, you get the hell off my farm. I didn't say hell. Mm-hmm. I use the F word. And he went away. And then the next morning, I was blacked out. I don't really remember it. I got in a truck, went to drive to the other side of the farm, and a handgun came, slid out from under the coat. And I remember what I did, and I was like, oh my gosh, the hair stood up. Mm-hmm. I was like, dude, you almost just killed somebody. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just flinched and pulled the trigger, you'd have blown this guy's head off. Mm-hmm. I was like, what is going on with you? Like, this is big. You need to quit. And, so it, you know, it got bad. And meanwhile, this is going on. The horse farm business on Kevin's end was kind of in a slump, so he couldn't really afford to pay me. So what he was doing was all the border. I was very handy. I'm still a very handy person. Like, there's nothing I can't fix. Like, I'm an awesome handyman. If it's broken, I can fix it. And so Kevin would basically find me work with the boarders on the farm. He's like, yeah, John can fix this. John can fix this. And we're in the late 90s now, early 2000s. And, you know, real estate was starting to get going. So I used to joke that Kevin would pimp me out, you know. And I would get, I started at $20 an hour, mm-hmm. But you know, I moved it up to 25 pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And before long, he would have a list because one lady would tell the other lady, look, this guy can fix anything. And so he would have a list sitting there and goes, you're going to work for Kathy today. You're going to do this for, you know, Diane tomorrow. You're going to do this and that and that. And after a while, I got wise to it. I was like, I'll take that list. I got it from here, you know. And I started basically... You know, Kevin couldn't afford to pay me 25. He was paying me probably 12. Mm-hmm. And so I just started doing the handyman thing for a while. You know, still an alcoholic, still functional. You know, mm-hmm. I got home and I drink at night.
Yeah.
But I was making money. And, but I'm, you know, with this girl. And it's bad. And long story short, she ended up leaving me. And I found out she was, you know, moving in with some other guy. Mm-hmm. And she was gone. And I'm going through this breakup and I just couldn't handle it. It was just like, this is killing me. And, I was drinking real hard one night and I fell asleep, you know, passed out basically sitting upright on the sofa. And, when I woke up the next morning, I looked around at all the beer cans and they looked like shotgun barrels. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but they looked like shotgun barrels. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's it. Yep. That's what I'm going to do. I said, I'm going to go ahead and tie one on tonight. Mm. And I know where the gun is. Mm. And yeah, that'll fix it. I already knew what gun it was. Mm-hmm. And I left and I went ahead to go to this job that I was building this shed for this girl, this lady. And the truck came to the intersection of 214 and Church Road, and I sitting in the light and I just started crying. I just broke down. Mm. I mean, it was like rock bottom. Like, my life sucks so bad. Mm-hmm. I had no way out. I was trapped. I was like, I've been wrestling with this thing, and like, there's just no way out of this thing. I can't do it, and I'm gonna kill myself tonight. I'm gonna blow my freaking head off. And I didn't even know if that would make it better. Mm. And I started crying, and I just instinctively turned the truck towards my mom's house. She lived in Davisonville at the time. And I just showed up there, you know, and I was running late that morning and knocked on the door and just busted out crying. Mm. And she just did what a mom did. She took me in, set me on the sofa, got me a cold washcloth put on my head. And she knew what was going on with the girl. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking to her. And I said, I can't do it anymore. I give up. I give up. And she brought me a Bible. I mean, she's not really very religious. I mean, she's always quote-unquote Christian. Mm-hmm. And I didn't mention this, but while I was going, years ago, I'd gone to Anne Arundel Community College, and I was always fascinated by psychology. I mean, I gobbled it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love it. And it basically, I was trying to figure myself out. And that's what a lot of people that get into psychology are doing. They're looking for answers. I was hungry for the truth. Like, why am I so screwed up? Why can't I figure this out? Why are these things holding me back? And I had a favorite professor. I mean, he was so profound that, I mean, he would stay after class to talk to people because it would affect them so deeply. He was truly gifted. And she went and looked him up in the Yellow Pages because I'd been done for years there, and wrote his number down and handed it to me. Said, you know, you used to love this guy, Colin. Mm. And, you know, it's 10, 11 in the morning. I still was going to kill myself. Mm-hmm. It was still in my head. And God did a funny thing. He didn't let me go home. I had snow removal contracts too. Like, even though I was alcoholic, I did pretty good money wise. I mean, I was pretty entrepreneurial. Kevin had given me his snow business. Mm-hmm. So I had contracts
private contracts where you do banks and parking lots mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And all of a sudden it started snowing. And I was laying there feeling like a piece of crap. And I look out the window. I was like, you got to be kidding me. It's snowing. And it started snowing harder and harder. And I was like, son of a bitch, I'm going to have to go plow snow. Here I am at the bottom of my barrel, and I got to get up and go to work. And then all of a sudden, the phone started ringing. I mean, it was like an inch an hour, 2 inch an hour stuff coming down all of a sudden. And then all of a sudden, I had to get up. And I called my guy that does the sidewalks. And the phone started ringing. People were complaining. You know, our walks need some shoveling, this, that, and the other. And this day, and I forgot to bring it with me, but I wrote about this day. This date was my moment of clarity. Moment of clarity, a lot of alcoholics will tell you, like when they're at rock bottom. And now looking back, God steps in. And he stepped in on this day. And he put me to work. And I worked that whole day. And I was another person that day. I went from suicidal to the best day of my life in a matter of hours. And it was like I was a different person, like all my fears and angers and jealousies and envies and all those human flaws went away. I didn't care about what you thought about me. I didn't care about being jealous. And my self-doubt went away. And I became, I think, for a little while, like a perfect Christian. Like, it was like he put me on his back, and I used to say it was like I was on the back of an angel flying around. And it was like he gave me a sample and said, look around, this is what it can be like. And it was a taste, and it was beautiful, and it was the best day of my life. I mean, we knocked out 23 job sites. I was in a wonderful mood. I talked to people with, a spring in my step. My snow shoveling guy, he tapped out about 2 a.m. And I finished it all by myself. I plowed the lots. I got out the truck. I shoveled the sidewalks. I mean, I was energized like nothing before. The thoughts in my head were beautiful. And I just was swimming in this wonderful life for a second. And it was beautiful. And I finished all those jobs, and I came home tired, and I walked up the steps of that apartment as the sun was coming up. And he didn't let me go to sleep at night. He didn't let me go sit alone in that apartment. And as I reached for the doorknob, I looked up, and I said, thank you. And I said, dang, if you didn't let me go home and be by myself, you put me to work. And I went right in the house. And then beer cans were still sitting there. I grabbed a piece of paper and I wrote down, I said, don't ever forget this day, this best day of your life. I mean, it was as if I was on the back of an angel mm-hmm. looking around. And from that point forward, I started the journey and the, the struggle to quit drinking. Mm-hmm. And I called that phone number that my mom handed me, Dr. Chatelaine, God rest his soul. And he answered. And he said, yeah, come on up, we'll talk. And that started a relationship. He was a mentor, but he was a psychiatrist, psychologist, psychoanalyst. So he not only was a doctor, he was also analyzed himself, so he didn't project anything from himself. I mean, he was so qualified of a person, and we just talked. Once a week, and then turned into twice a week. And come to find out, he was in the seminary. And he majored in philosophy and then went into the seminary. And he had to quit the seminary. I said, why'd you quit? And he says, I came to learn that being a pastor was just too stressful. And it made me realize, like, that must be a stressful job, because you're not now a psychiatrist and people come to you about killing themselves.
Right.
But I guess at least he got paid. But and through that relationship and working with him, the first thing he said to me, he goes, "You got to quit drinking." And, you know, it was like, I don't have a magic word, you know. And he says, "If you're escaping reality, you're not going to grow."
Yeah.
He said, "You need to put your face in the fire." And it was like kind of my words later, but the idea is you cannot escape life, and that's what I was doing. I was self-medicating to escape the pain. And if you escape it, you get fixated at a certain point in your life and you stop growth right there. So I had to quit that. I had to face my fears, face what I was running from. And, you know, it was all kinds of self-insecurities, you know, abandonment issues, you know, just garden variety, low self-esteem. I mean, you know, millions of people struggle with it. But, you know, through that, I learned myself. I learned what makes me act and react. And it was very helpful. I went to AA quite a bit. It wasn't the only way that I quit. I mean, it was really just learning myself and going through therapy with him. But AA was key. You know, those steps in AA are so important, you know. Come to believe that, you know, your life has become unmanageable. Come to believe that a power higher than yourself can restore you to sanity. Come to become willing to turn your life over to God as you understand him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're the same for any addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to solve a problem, you have to first admit you have a problem.
Yeah.
And then you cannot quit something like that on your own. You need somebody to be there or something to be there when you're BSing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Over those 4 years, I went back to college. I got a degree in, not a degree, I got certified as in architecture and mm-hmm. plan writing. Over those 4 years, I took my handyman skills and went and got my MHIC license.
Okay.
Started my own business, moved off that farm,
mm-hmm.
quit drinking, started my own business, bought a house, rehabbed a house, met my wife, Carolyn, again. We had met, you know, back in the day when I was partying. She went to Southern, and, you know, I'm about 5 years older than her, and you know, we hooked up back then, and, you know, I was reckless, but we loved each other. I mean, we liked each other, but she was like, "You're kind of screwed up, dude." Like, and we kind of hooked up, and she just walked away. She told me later that at one point she just looked at me. She's like, "I can't keep doing this with this guy. He's a loser." And she went off and went to Virginia Tech, and then I, you know, kept on drinking for, you know, 4 or 5 years while she was there, but it was a cool story, really. I started my own business. I had quit drinking. Things were going great. I'm rehabbing this house that I was living in. I had an employee that he had a drinking problem, and I was trying to help him. And he was friends with Carolyn's fiance. She had now graduated college. You know, I had just quit drinking, and I was just trying to stay away from anything that would, you know, caused me to start drinking. And they say, you know, you probably ought to not even get involved in a relationship for like 8 months to a year, really just get yourself figured out. And it had been about 8 months, and I was just like, I was lonely, dude. I just wanted a friend. And I'd had two bad relationships, and I wrote down on paper what I wanted in a girl. And it was almost like check the boxes. Like, I wanted somebody that was been through that first kind of crazy relationship. I wanted somebody that could stand on their own 2 feet, that wouldn't be dependent on me. And so my employee, he was friends with Carolyn's fiance, and I used to ask her about it. I was like, "They really getting married?" He's like, "Yeah, well, they got plans." And then I would keep tabs, and it's like, "Yeah, they're getting married on this date." And I was like, "Dang, man, I guess I missed out on that. Oh well, I'm really going with my life." And the date was, as it turned out, they had their, he told me they were arguing a little bit and kind of caught my ear. I was like, "Really? They on the rocks?" they gonna break up? And he's like, nah, they still got the wedding date, and it's on so and such, and they're gonna get married at Steamboat Landing, which is now Thursdays. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, oh well, see how that goes. They're arguing and all. Well, I just bought, you know, this house I'm working on, and it was right across the street from waterfront property. And I'm doing my thing. We're you know, I'm a struggling new contractor. I don't have a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, it's working. Well, here comes Hurricane Isabel. He comes in, and it, I don't know if you remember it, but it had record high tides. Mm-hmm. And the hurricane wasn't that bad, but the tides were in, like 4 foot above flood level. I mean, mm-hmm. it flooded Annapolis. And this storm flooded her venue that she was going to have the wedding, and they had to postpone, right? At the same time, the same storm flooded all the houses across the street from my house. Mm-hmm. And the floodwaters, you know, went away, and I needed work. So I walked across the street, and they had all these people lined up, all these insurance adjusters were out there, and everybody's scrambling to find licensed contractors. Mm-hmm. And I just got my license, and I just got my insurance. And I got this job. The adjuster was standing there, and you know, you just needed to gut like for the bottom 4 foot of the house and, mm-hmm. and replacing mold remediation, and it's straightforward. Mm-hmm. And he says, "You a licensed contractor?" I said, "Yes, sir, I am." And he says, "Can you do the job for this much?" And he showed me his clipboard, like the price, mm-hmm. and it was like 4 or 5 times what I could do it for. Like I had a figure in my head of like 10 grand.
Yeah.
It was $45,000.
Dang.
I was like, yes, sir, I can do it. Then I went and did another job in the next neighborhood. Same thing. A tree went through a roof and it was like, you know, patch the hole, put some shingles on it. And insurance guy was like, "You're going to pay like $5,000 for this." I was like, dude, it takes like 3 or 4 hours. Really? I'll do it for that.
Yeah.
So it was like, and then all this work was just rolling in. I was like, it was great. I mean, it was a hurricane mm-hmm. and it ruined a lot of people's situation, but it was like a blessing and it gave me all this work.
Yeah.
And also screwed her wedding up. Mm-hmm. Right. And so they never rescheduled. Because they were kind of on the rocks. I think she was going to go through with it, she said later. Mm-hmm. But God stepped in and said, "No, you ain't getting married to that guy." And so I was like, you know, Eric and I were working together, and I kept tabs. And I was like, he's like, "Yeah, man, he's moving out." Like, they just called it off. Mm-hmm. He moved out. I was like, "What? She's single?" I was like, "No way."
I love that you had that guy as like, you know, helping you out kind of, and like yeah man, this is the time.
And he was really good friends with her fiance, so they talked all the time. And you know, and her fiance was a drinker and Eric was a drinker, and I guess they just hung out. But you know, Carolyn was never a really big drinker, so mm-hmm. I said, "Eric, you gotta get me over there, man. Like I ain't seen her in years." Mm-hmm. You know, last time she saw me I was like passed out somewhere, you know. And you know, I'd quit now for almost a year, and I was looking better, you know, mm-hmm. cleaned up. Mm-hmm. And he goes, "You know, I loaned him a window unit air conditioning a couple of years ago, and, you know, that was, I loaned it to her boyfriend, so we can go get that." I was like, "Yeah, tell her you need to come get that AC." And so we rolled up in my big old F-250, and I knocked on the door, and she answered it. She goes, "Oh, John, ain't seen you in years. You look a lot better." And I was like, "Oh, you look pretty good too. Like you bought your own house. Like you're doing great." She's like, "Yeah, I graduated from tech and I bought my house and I work in Rockville and mm-hmm. everything's going great." And I was like, "Yeah, things are going great with me too." Mm-hmm. And the rest is history. You know, mm-hmm. I showed up the following week and so like, "You want to go for a ride on my motorcycle?" Took her for a ride. And honestly, I just wanted a friend. Mm-hmm. I just wanted somebody to hang out with. Mm-hmm. And it, I think she invited me a week later to go shopping with her to go get a dress for a wedding for her girlfriends. And I just went shopping with her and I was just fell in love. It was like, mm-hmm. dude, like, this is so great. We just hang out and it's awesome. And so, you know, years later, we got 2 little girls and we're happily married. And, you know, it could have gone another way. Mm-hmm. I mean, God stepped in there and just, what brought almost tragedy to other people's lives was a beautiful gift to both of us in two mm-hmm. different ways. And I mean, we came together because of that. And she moved in with me on that house I was working on. She sold her house. We got married. And then, you know, I'd kind of, the business was going so well, I needed more room. And so I ended up selling my house. No, I didn't sell the house. I sold. So the house I bought came with a spare lot, and it was a good deal. And my aunt found me this deal. And so I had rehabbed the house and made it beautiful. I mean, it was gorgeous. It's a masterpiece, really. I mean, if I don't say so myself, but it was really, I did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my therapy. I mean, it was like when you quit drinking, you lose all your friends. Mm-hmm. Like all my friends. I mean, I had one friend call me one time. He goes, "You still on the wagon?" And literally hung up on me when I said yes.
Mm.
This is my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
He's since committed suicide.
Mm.
So, you know, that house was my therapy. You know, I just worked on that house. Mm. And then, you know, I'd stay home on Saturday nights and just put down tile.
Mm-hmm.
And I just poured into it. And it was great to have. And also it was great as a contractor because, you know, I was a handyman. I'm self-taught on everything. And I, you know, went and got an MHIC license. So, you know, I would just put in my own tile floor. And then somebody say, "You know how to do tile?" "Yeah." And then, you know, "Do you know how to do this?" So I'd practice on my own house.
Mm-hmm.
But we grew out of that place. And I sold the lot beside it and bought this farm that had popped up for sale. An estate sale down the road in Lothian. It was a horse farm that got tied up in an estate sale. My aunt was selling it,
mm-hmm.
and she asked me to go bush hog the thing. And I went over and I said, this place is turnkey. This is a turnkey business.
Mm-hmm.
I got to make this work. And so, long story short, I sold that lot and then pulled a equity line on that house, kept the house, and put down a third of the money on that farm. There was no way I could make the payment on that farm unless the farm came with a tenant house and the main house, and there was a bunch of empty fields.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Carolyn, if I get four horses in here and get that house rented, I can make the payment." So I signed the papers. I gutted that house the next day. Took 2 days to gut it, and I redid the house in 3 weeks. It had mold issues, the tenant house. It had been empty for a while. And I had a renter in it on the fourth week.
Mm.
And her security deposit and her first month's rent paid for half the mortgage. And then as far as the horses, I advertised in the local horse paper. And I lowballed everybody in town and got four horses in there
mm-hmm.
in 4 weeks. And they paid me. And I made the first mortgage payment.
Yeah.
And I've never made a mortgage payment since. That farm's been in the black since I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had to come out of my pocket since I bought it. And the crazy thing is, the day after I signed the paper, the contract to buy that farm, Kevin from the old farm,
mm-hmm.
who drank and smoked, he'd been back and forth fighting with laryngeal cancer. And he had thought he beat it in 05, and I helped him with all that, taking him to the hospital and getting him through that. But he was hard-headed. He wouldn't do the surgery, didn't want his voice box out, so he just did radiation. Well, they got it all but 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me and he said, "Look, man, my cancer's back and I ain't gonna fight it.
Mm.
You want this farm?" I said, "Well, Kevin, I just bought a farm and like I got my hands full right now because
mm-hmm.
I got to make this payment.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to rehab this house and I got to get some horses on this farm. So I'm gonna have to ask you to tell that cancer to hold on. Because I can't come help you right now." And damn if he didn't do it. That wonderful man kept feeding him horses with cancer.
Mm.
And he made it a month while I got my farm squared away. And once I got that going, I immediately moved in with him and helped him out. He died 10 days later.
Mm.
And I was there for him. And I mean, it's a bad thing, cancer, and
mm-hmm.
Carolyn was there helping, and he died in February. It was a cold night, 3 a.m. He hated the cold, and boom, now I own two farms.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, like, if you inherit, like, that house over there, you can just take some time and figure it out. Well, somebody leaves you a horse farm, you got to feed the horses the next day. Mm-hmm. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And you take over, it's like a running engine, you know? And so I went from living in a house on a quarter acre lot in Deal to owning two horse farms over 40 acres in 1 month.
It's crazy.
Taking care of 20 some horses.
Mm-hmm.
And the farm had a couple rental properties on it too. And yeah, I was in sensory overload for about 2 years.
Yeah, like, and just, now you're also mourning your friend and all that too, not to mention.
Yeah, I had to give his eulogy and trying to deal with that. And, you know, trying to run a farm from a distance. And his farm had more horses than mine. It had 20 horses.
Mm.
And so, you know, I made it happen. I mean, I don't need to go in how I made it happen, but I hired this girl and put her in his house and said, feed these horses. You got a free place to live. And we made it work. And then, you know, years later, I got Sergio in there. He's a good friend of mine. He's the caretaker now. And, I just sold that farm. Mm-hmm. I ran it for two farms for, I believe, 17 years.
Mm.
And then I started the sawmill a few years back just as a hobby because I missed getting sawdust on my shoes because I couldn't keep on contracting. You know, I had to give that up to do the farms. You don't make as much money, but the lifestyle is a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy with it. But just my kids are getting older now and they grow up so fast that, you know, I just don't want to be working as much. And not to mention, I started going to Chesapeake Church, met you, and I just, God said, you know, to me, you know, I just can't work this much. It's not as important anymore to make money. So I put that farm up for sale, got a contract on it, and it's sold, I didn't know what I was going to do with the extra time, but I knew God would find a way or fill my time.
Mm-hmm.
And right after I sold it, I went down to Honduras with Bob Sickle and experienced that. And I said, here it is. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I mean, that changed my heart. Helping those people down there, helping somebody that is truly in need with your own hands.
Mm-hmm.
It changed me, and I never can go back. It's like when Jesus says, you drink from my well, it will fill you forever.
Mm-hmm.
And monetary gain does not have the same allure to me anymore. It's that thing there is so much better. It fills you.
Mm-hmm.
It fills you. And it readjusted my priorities in life. And so, you know, I'm in a position now where, I mean, I don't want to brag, but I mean, I'm in a spot where I've never imagined where I would be in life as far as money and what I have. And, you know, I'm so blessed, incredibly blessed. And, I've often wondered why I'm so blessed.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I got to share, you know, it's a unique story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, I think the question always is like, what are you going to do with all the blessings that you have, you know? And I think you're already doing it.
Well, yeah, I feel like I'm obligated. It's like, you know, everything comes from God. And why'd he pick me out? I mean, there's lots of people quit drinking and, you know, they're not as blessed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm still learning. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is, God was blessing me before I even came to church. You know, I started going to Chesapeake about 10 years ago, but I was just going through the motions for about 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until recently that I really started getting involved and meeting people like yourself and other people at the church and just really getting into the word and working it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's amazing. It's really amazing, to see his plan and experience a biblical family. And, I mean, he's still working on me, but he was blessing me back when I was screwing up so bad and took care of me, and he's had me the whole way. And I suffered for years. Like I started drinking when I was like 22 and I quit when I was like 31.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bad, let me tell you. I mean, I used to drink and drive all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We were at a party at Chesapeake or, Chestertown one night at Washington College. We got kicked out of the bar at 2 a.m. No, it was 1 o'clock. And the bars downtown closed at 2. And I wanted to make it from there to Annapolis before the bars went out, because I wanted to chase girls. Mm-hmm. And me and my buddy, who is now dead, the one that killed himself, we made it from Washington College in Chestertown to Annapolis in a half hour. Mm. You can't do that unless you're doing 120 miles an hour. Jeez. It was downpouring. We were going across the Bay Bridge. I was steering with my knee, doing 125 miles an hour in an Acura Legend, floored, drinking beer, smoking cigarettes, reaching behind a seat, music wide open. Tell me God wasn't taking care of me. There is no way. I mean, you couldn't do that. And I got home that night. It was just the amount of things that happened that he took care of me is incredible. I mean, you know, I owe him everything. Mm-hmm. So crazy. I don't know why, you know, I'm so picked out, but you know, he does this with everybody. Everybody is being blessed by God here and there, everywhere, you know?
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of that verse in Isaiah where he talks about walking through the fire and not being burned.
Yeah.
Like that is exactly what I'm hearing. You know, it's like, it's so crazy that you're here now and you and I are talking about all of this and you get to share, you know, what God has done in your life now. And, two farms later, right? And it's cool, 'cause I can see all that God has done for you, and it's an encouragement to me, and I know it'll be encouragement to others as well. So
yeah, I just Psalm 66:10-13, I jotted it down the other day. It says, "For you, God, tested us. You refined us like silver. You brought us into prison and laid burdens on our backs. You let people ride over our heads. We went through fire and water, but you brought us to a place of abundance. I would come to your temple with burnt offerings." You know? I don't know why I had to go through all that. I don't know why I put myself through that, but we're all humans. We all sin. We all do stupid things, and we think we got it all figured out, and I had twisted myself up into a knot. It was a mess, and there was no way out. There was no way out other than the miracle of God. He brought me out of it in a beautiful way. Like, not only did he save my life, he just brought me out into this perfect solution that was, I mean, like, what the heck? Are you kidding me? And, you know, I think a little bit of it is, you know, I try to be humble, and, you know, I don't know. I don't know why, but
God
here
is
I am.
So good. Yeah. God is so good.
He is so good. And, yeah, Carolyn will tell you the same thing. She's like, he was a mess. I would never talk to that guy the way he was. but when he showed up, he was a different guy. So even the miracle in me, you know, in quitting, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. It's hard to quit. But I think that when you get away from addiction, I mean, you've shared with me, you've had some struggles with addiction. I think I think the longer you stay away from that, just not doing what you want to do and abstaining from that, I think God smiles on that daily.
Yeah, it's dying to self, right?
Yeah.
Paul talks about.
Yeah. I see that in myself now, that even more I grow in faith is like, I mean, my old self is gone, and I just want to grow in a new way. I mean, the story's there to tell. I don't want to forget it, but I want nothing to do with that old way, you know. And there's somebody talking at an AA meeting years ago, and they shared with me that, you know, reason he quit, he had just had a kid. And he'd gone through a situation like I just described to you, and he said he never wanted his kid to see him drunk, and that stuck with me. And people's testimonies all through these experiences I went through stuck with me. One guy said he used to be paranoid when he drank and thought this person had a problem with him, that person had a problem, what's wrong with you, what's wrong with you? And he had to look in the mirror and realize that you ain't that important. People aren't sitting around worrying about you. You're just not that important. That stuck with me. But no, I never want my kids to see that person, you know. I'm glad I had kids later in life. You know, some people are ready for them. I mean, you know, it's God's plan, you know. But I'm glad that's in the past. It's never totally in the past. That's why I said one day at a time. You don't want to get cocky.
Yeah, and that's what you and I were talking about too, constantly calibrating your heart in the morning, you know.
Uh-huh.
Getting in the Word, digging into that.
Yeah.
And reminding yourself where you've been and where you don't want to go.
Yeah.
And now that you're walking in healing, following the Lord.
Yeah.
It's just so cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just thank you so much for being here today and being willing to sit down and just share.
Yeah, man. Thanks for listening to me ramble.
Hey, I love it. Thank you so much for just coming and sitting down with me. So
yeah, I'm glad God brought us together because He did. And
absolutely.
He has spoken to me through you.
Mm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. All right, y'all. Well, we will catch you next time.
Same it goes for the wind. It blows in our breathing. Stops just to begin again. Unseen but known like my sin. Unseen but known like my sin. What's rainfall from the sky?